Alright, go ahead, I am now recording.
Hello! Is this Pa, the Shy Yeti?
Now it's time for the silliest podcast in the world! It's the Shy Yeti Podcast!
With me, Shy Yeti.
He's not that shy!
104.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Shy Life Podcast. This is me, Shy Yeti, or Paul, whatever you like. It's good to have you back. This episode, well, our theme, it's stories. Yes. And I'm not necessarily thinking of stories in books or bedtime stories or kind of thinking maybe personal stories. The stories we tell ourselves, the stories we tell about ourselves to other people. Tall tales, short tales, medium length tales, all sorts of things, basically. To be fair, we're not always 100% honest when we meet other people and they ask about our lives. Sometimes we pretend to be happier or more successful than we really are. I think on social media, a lot of people exaggerate their successes. Sometimes they exaggerate their, well, not exactly failures, but when they're sad, they ramp it up to get extra attention. I mean, we all do it to a certain extent. You know, even if we're not on social media, we do it in real life. Sometimes we probably do it without even realising we're doing it. So we're not being critical here. We're just, well, you know, it just seems like it could be an interesting theme for an episode. Yeah. So I hope you'll join us. But first, I need to run the theme music. Here we go.
What's going to happen today?
Oh my God, it's enormous. It's the Shy Life Podcast.
The show is out of this world.
Oh dear, this isn't going to end well.
Very strange show indeed. Oh, a million kisses, darling.
I asked for pies. That's all I asked for. Pies.
My name is Faxman Whiskers. I always listen to the Shy Life Podcast. And so does Oliver Lapps. Go to Oliver.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Always listen. Absolutely.
Those poor listeners, what have they done to deserve this, eh? Oh, dear, oh, dear.
Well, there you have it. There you have it, yes. So, storytelling, yes. There are so many different aspects to that word. I mean, sometimes stories are true stories, true life stories. It's not always fiction. But even a truthful story, the way people tell them, the way the story is unfolded. I'm sure if you had five different people in the room and they were all reporting on the same event, every version of the story would be different. The story would be told slightly differently, with a slightly different emphasis or focusing on slightly different elements of what happened. It's fascinating, really. As I was saying, to greater or lesser extents, we tell stories all the way through our lives. We tell stories about other people, we tell stories about ourselves, we tell fictional stories about characters, certainly I do. But as I say, I don't want to point fingers and say it's wrong or it's right or it's, I just think it's interesting because often you hear stories from people, you never really know how much of what you're hearing is true. Well, sometimes you do, but then it can be a bit of a shock. But, you know, you presume what you're hearing, unless you know otherwise, you presume what you hear is true. Now, as a writer, I'm often telling stories that are completely untrue, but then I'm not pretending they're anything but untrue. They are fiction. But I do have a certain element in my writing where I am presenting fictionalised versions of friends' lives. My own life, certainly when we did Sutton Park, we all played different versions of ourselves, and we might be talking about that a bit in a while. But I write about characters that are based on real people or are versions of real people. For instance, in my series Hot Stuff in Kensington Gore, I have fictional versions not only of Shy Yeti, who, I mean, I've written about myself in different forms for a long time, because if I'm writing something funny, it allows me to poke fun at myself without insulting anybody. But I mean, sure, I could have invented another character altogether with no connection to myself, but it's all part of having fun with writing, I suppose. In my recent script books, I have written about fictional versions of Toppy Smelly from the Smellcast and Lotzel. I've written fictional versions of Andrew and Lisa from Round the Archives podcast. But to be fair, they had done that themselves. Andrew had written a series called Toby and Lisa, or Toby and Lucy. The two series were separate. One was for a video project and one was for a book. And the names were changed slightly. But yeah, in Sutton Park we were forever presenting fictional versions of ourselves, because everybody, well, that's not quite true. I was going to say that everybody played versions of themselves. That was pretty much the norm, sure. Some people, to be honest, didn't really act. You know, if they weren't a main character, they might appear at a party and they'd just be themselves. There was no acting involved. But any of us who, you know, played characters or did acting, we weren't playing genuine versions of ourselves. For instance, Troby was, yeah, a scientist. He wasn't just an ordinary scientist. He was, you know, you're a crazy sort of, I don't know, comic book version of a scientist. I talked to Nick a little bit about this recently to see what his memories were. When I filmed with Nick, I would say that he was slightly different from some of the other actors involved in the show. He was happy to be involved with the fiction, but he liked to bring in real life. So there was a divide. I mean, I guess I probably did it too, but most of what I was recording with myself was total fiction. And sometimes I would play characters who weren't me at all, or I'd stand in for characters when no one else was there to stand in for them. But Nick, he liked to skirt the line between bringing in real life into his acting, whether it would be because he was filming one of his plays, one of his scripts, or because his real-life girlfriend was there and he wanted to kind of introduce her on camera, and obviously some of their real-life relationship would come in. So yes, let's have a listen to what Nick and I discussed. Well, Nick's here again. And Nick, this time on the Shy Life podcast, well, this episode we've been talking about stories and storytelling, some of them real, some of them not real. I thought that we would discuss actual sort of stories that we've been involved in recently, our writing projects.
Yes.
Now, we've talked to the listeners before about our joint projects, so we'll start with that there. So we're recording this, although it'll be going out a little bit down the line. We're recording this in late March. And what episode are we up to now?
I'm currently writing episode 6 of the thing.
Because I took rather a long time with 5.
I think obviously you're very busy.
And Christmassy time.
Yeah. I'm currently writing episode 6, which has a working title of Forgotten Fruits.
Mm.
The story's getting what's quite nice is I don't think we're actually wandering off the beaten track with it, but we're letting out clues and letting in characters at a nice steady pace, but at the same time I think we're just letting a few revelations go. There'll be a kind of a couple of twists in this next one.
I don't think we're quite at the stage where we, you know, when we get to a point, we'll know that, oh, actually, okay, perhaps there's just going to be another 4 chapters to go, or I couldn't tell you how many, and we're not setting that, we're not setting any limitations on ourselves yet, because the story can be as long as we...
I don't think it's ambled, has it? I mean, too badly.
No.
It's an interesting way. It's the first time I've worked this way since we did Prison and the Sun in 1993, and literally we are teasing each other with the story and neither of us know how it's going to finish up, and it's
I hate these because sometimes it works. I mean, it all works for
different ways for different people, but I've always hated people who sort of say, this is the way you do things, this is the way it works, or you must have a detailed plan of your story. The whole world will disintegrate if you haven't planned every single word that you're going to write. And sometimes you do need the structure, and sometimes certain people might need the structure, but there's no harm in doing it the way that we're doing it, because we can come back and we, you know, we're only writing the draft. I mean, we're not going to go through masses and masses of rewrites, but we, you know, we might tweak it. Before we finally push it off, if we've, and also we're still in the stage that we can, if we come up with a really great revelation and we want to go back and sprinkle a few little clues out, we can still do that.
Also, I mean, I've got, because I'm writing for the CB character who hasn't actually been lucid since chapter two, I've kind of had to go back and kind of make sure I didn't contradict myself with anything I've already said. I suppose, again, in rewrites, you know, there's always that.
We can do little bits. We don't need to do, you know, we don't have to scrap. I've never scrapped, like, whole chapters or chunks of books, which I know a lot of writers do. I think I'm always, well, with my own projects, I'm usually planned enough that would just be weird, because the story had been planned that I wouldn't be writing it if it wasn't needed. But, you know, that's just me. I'm not saying that it makes me better or worse or whatever, but different people have different ways of writing, don't they?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I, as I say, and also different places to write. I mean, you seem to be gifted in the fact that you can write anywhere at any time. I need to really be in the right mood and get my brain in gear, and I'm usually sitting in that big chair. I think I wrote Sunset Warden in that chair, and there's a big green chair behind me. And my favourite place ever is the Salisbury Reference Library,
which actually appears, doesn't it? I certainly had
a mental picture of it in my head. So it's great. So the two characters, they're more sort of, their starting point was us, but I think they've moved on to, they're their own people now, I think. I can't imagine you and I gallivanting in the way that they have already. And we have not an anti-hero, but an anti-hero.
Yeah. I was thinking recently that, because I have quite a lot of projects on the go, although some of them, a lot of my projects, I'm going to talk about a project I'm just finishing, or just finished, or pretty much nearly finished in a minute, but we're going to talk about one of your other projects in a second. But before we do that, I would say that a lot of my projects, my script book projects, probably take about 2.5 years to go from start to finish, because I might write them. Well, some of them are written faster than others, but the sort of rewriting bit and the proofreading bit is the bit that takes a long time. So it does often, you know, when I look back at the different stages, it's probably taken between 2 and 2.5 years with each one. But obviously, I'm writing, you know, when I write the first draft, I'm going on to the next season first draft, whilst I'm then doing. But I found that works, because if you think of something later on that you're writing in a draft, you can kind of drop little hints earlier. If you're still working on another version of an earlier one, it all sounds very complicated, and I'm sure it is, but I'm sort of used to it now. But when I'm writing new material, I'm quite happy that I might just write, not a paragraph because it's all script, but I might write for like half a page, and that might be what I do. I pretty much, when I'm at work, I do find 5 minutes to do, when everybody else goes off for a fag break or a coffee break, I'll take 5 minutes just to write half a page of dialogue or take my story a little bit further. And sometimes I find that little, it's like a little injection of, sometimes I'm in the mood and I've got the time, I could write 2 or 3 pages, but if I haven't got the time, then an injection of just a few really crisp lines, it might be that a scene, it took me 2 weeks of small little, and that sometimes you have to be careful you haven't contradicted yourself. Or
now that is one way in that one thing that's changed for me is in terms of work. When I was in retail, I would be up there on my lunch break, an hour lunch break, and I think most of something like the Dominoes, which was my show for the junior sect of the Aldbury Players 21 years ago, most of that was actually written in my lunch break. Success in all lunch breaks, not one lunch break. Because at the time I was getting over Jill dying and I was in a bit of a haze, but the discipline of work meant that sort of, you know, I had something to occupy my mind.
Yeah.
Whereas now I only get half an hour for lunch and have done for the last 18 years, and there's no really place where I can take myself off a ride. The nearest I came to it was in 2003, I think, when I was just about to do Gift from Eternity, and the whole thing needed to be rushed into production very quickly indeed, because we were losing Tom and Amy, and I went down to the hospice garden, which was just over yonder from where my office was at the time, and I was sit and block the scenes. In that case, I wasn't actually writing, but I was just planning my shots.
Yeah.
But that's the nearest I've come to it. Whereas, I mean, I wrote chunks of Run in the Four Boys back in '96, but now I just don't have the time, you know, barely have the.
But you've been working on one of your other projects. Would you like to, well, we probably have covered it, but never mind, what's one of your main projects which you've been doing?
Yes, I mean, I've put it to one side a bit because I did the remastering with Keith Musselwhite, I took my old films. But what I'm doing, I mean, whereas I've had a mental block with new stuff, I've sort of found the time to go back and upgrade, if you like, and cascade out my old stuff. Pretty well everything I've written now is word processed and stored, but there's one particular thing I've been meaning to do for years, and that's collate all the stuff I did back in the 70s. I had this chance game that turned into a series a series of synopses of sci-fi adventures, and called The Magnet Editor, which then had a spin-off series called Life After, which started in 88.
Which I wrote for.
Which you wrote for, yes. You contributed 5 stories to that. And in 1982, with The Magnet Editor, I was joined by my old junior school friend, Joe Bunsell, who... his family is actually in, well, all of his family is in the military, or every single military, and also he's got a background in science, so he was a super person to have on board, and likes corny old horror films, I more or less handed the reins over to him when I went to senior school, and I then sneaked back and contributed to 2 or 3 stories a year for each season. And they're episodic adventures like Doctor Who.
You avoid that sort of continuing serious
thing now,
yes. Don't you?
I do, because I did 17 years of that. So I like one-off things with one-off characters and just moving on to something completely new. But with this, I've been thinking for years back, there was this mountain of work that both Joe and I did, and yourself, of course. And for years I've been trying to work out how to convey it in a kind of book, because it is an extraordinary thing that's happened, and a very creative period of my life, which was a gas. It was great, but my first idea was an anecdotal book. And for years I sort of thought, oh well, and if I include this bit and that bit, and I thought to myself, there was a certain traumatic incident that happened to me 5 years ago which made me generally reconsider things about, life's too short, we've got to do this and that and that and that. So in actual fact I thought, sod it, I've got all these synopses, they're just going to sit there and rot otherwise, let's just throw absolutely everything we've got in one book or two books or however many volumes it takes, and let's just do this. And so the first book is called Magnet Memories, the story of a secret series, which is all about the Magnet Editor, the very beginnings of it, because I remember it quite well, even though it was like nearly 40 years ago. And and it carries through, and until you don't really get the full synopsis of the stories until you get to 1982 with Joe, because once he took over, I thought, well, we've got to record this somehow. Mm. And Doctor Who was magazine was doing the archive section, which does, and that's very much how what I based the sort of stories on. But we went on till 87. I've always been a bit OCD about endings, and I said in 1983, right, I think we'll call it a day in 1987, which sounded miles away when you're 14 and 15, and I thought we're bound to have got fed up with it by then, so we'll carry on, and that'll be a neat 10 years. We got to 87, and it was quite clear, you know, because it's a catch 22. You raise your game to make a really good finish. But at the end, you think, well, this is a bit of a shame that we're breaking up the team. And attempts at replacement had ended in failure. We just didn't hit the right thing. So we brought it back with specials, and then those specials became what, two, and then four. And we thought, well, let's just make a whole new series out of it. The second book, which probably won't be out until next year, is called Life After, which was the name of the series. Life After Magnet Memory, as it were. But the first book, we're going to put our shoulder to the stone and try and get it out for November, which is the 40th anniversary of when I started it all. And it was just an excuse, really, to kill time between breakfast, the 25-minute or half an hour gap between breakfast and when I had to leave for school. It became, because of Doctor Who, because of Flash Gordon, it became an episodic thing, and you'd leave it on a cliffhanger and just amuse yourself. And there's stories attributed to, I'll be sending one copy to Dubai, because there were stories contributed to by David Sprakes when he was eight, and our friend David, and he doesn't even remember it, and he'll have the story named after him, but I can remember it like it was yesterday. Yeah. He didn't actually he contributed a few ideas, but he didn't contribute sort of wholesale storylines like Joe did.
When I was writing my memories for Life After, I was naughty and I tweaked my story. I didn't change the stories, but I kind of up 2016 or 15, whenever I did it, them, so that, you know.
Inevitably, it's you do have to, and also, of course, I transcribed it from the tape, so some things get lost in translation sometimes. But the other thing is, a bit like fairy tales, some of the really early stories were added to over the years. Mm. So, and I'm quite frank about this in the book, you know, I said, you know, what you've got there, this is the synopsis as I have it. Mm-hmm. What you've got there is the basic bones of the story in 1977, and all the character names were added in the 80s. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got to kind of, it's a bit like a historical document where things were tweaked, or if historical building, the thing, that was added in 1874, it's only really where you get to the Joe ones where everything is authentically as it was in the 80s. It's an odd book, because I don't know what people quite will make of it, but it's part episode guide, part reflective critique. And I'm not, you know, I don't say what a wonderful story that is, or I don't say crap to every single episode. Mm. All the three of us actually speak as we find. It's also a snapshot of growing up, because when I start the first book, I'm nine. Mm-hmm. And when I finish the second book, I'm just coming up to 26. Mm-hmm. So I wrote for Cabin, the lead character, for 17 years. And that's a very long time to be writing one character. In the end, he became a bit like Peter Pan, because, he never grew up. He was like the older brother that was always trying to coax you into going for one more adventure and things like that. And like Puff the Magic Dragon, one of us was going to cease to exist. Mm. I didn't know till later, because I wrote a Blake 70-like cliffhanger where if it's the end of the series, then that's a good last bang. But if it's not, then you could just about get away with getting out of it. What I didn't know, because with Joe and I had sort of lost touch by then, that he had actually gone on after that and sprung Cabin out of the problem I'd faced him with in 94, and there are other adventures which I didn't know anything about. Unfortunately, he can't seem to lay his hands on them. I said, well, get a move on, because we're getting the books out. One thing consistently with Joe is he's not very good at doing things when he's asked. I actually asked him about 3 years ago to contribute, because obviously with email and everything now it's so easy. You can just, I bunged him a copy of the latest copy of the book. I said, can you comment on this, can you comment on that, and the excuses he was coming out with was absolutely pathetic, and I just thought, oh, sod it, and I will bring you around, bribe you with a bit of interesting watching, fill you with alcohol, read the story like you're a 2-year-old, and we will record it, and you will get it done.
I should have made it harder to get.
Yeah, you should have. You were far too efficient.
You sent me my stories, and I just did a little bit.
I wanted Joe to do exactly what you did, just write your bit in, say your bit, and ping it back to me. We could have had the book out 2 years ago.
Because I had other things going, I didn't dedicate myself to it, but I just did, okay, well, I'll do 10 minutes each day, and I got through it.
Yeah, but at least you weren't giving a year's worth of excuses.
But I could have had food and alcohol. I mean,
my favourite one, I know this isn't knocking him as a friend or even a writer, but my favourite one was, he's always ill or something. You can write when you're ill. In fact, it's better. And said, oh, I had 12 cold callers in one day. No, you didn't. So, I mean, they were getting Munchausen-esque in their ridiculousness.
I like getting on with my podcast when I'm ill, at least.
Literally, usually on a Saturday night, I get him round. We started, obviously, with 82 about 2 years ago. Was it 2 years ago? I can't remember now, but we're up to spring 85. We didn't do as many stories in 85 as we did in 84, so I worked it out, and he's into it. Don't get me wrong, he's enjoying experiencing them. As time goes on, the less embarrassing, we've got past the embarrassing story, most of the embarrassing stories, and he's actually, there's a sort of a sense of anticipation that we're getting into 85 and then 86 and 87, I think we're both much prouder of our work for Life After because we were that much older and we could.
It's difficult finding a way to mark. I mean, at least especially when it was all synopsises, and there's not like a visual side of it. With Southern Park, I've tried to work out different books, and I tried to do like a anecdotal book, and this was before we were converting it. Whereas now I'm able to actually put the episodes up.
Obviously, I've been it has to be my main source of concentration this year, getting the book finished. But in actual fact, I mean, your podcast goes out to 200-300 people.
You get on that way, yeah.
Yeah. This is a sort of a throwdown gauntlet. We're talking of the visual side of things. We are looking for an artist to envisage a book cover because I want a really good book cover for this. Obviously, it's space. There's a few strange characters, most of which are drawn, some of which are actually, I mean, it's going to be huge, really. It's going to be about 600 pages long. But, I mean, it's broken up by the different stories. There's a critique and there's all the influences. Because the childhood influences, I didn't realise until I went back and looked at it, realise how many vastly different influences there were from Looking Magazine and some of the American action series, and the new Avengers was very much my inspiration, more so than Doctor Who, I would say, in that first season. And then Doctor Who influence took over too much in many respects. There's several stories I just ruined by, it was too much reliance on Doctor Who. So I hope people are going to have a good giggle and it's going to be interesting for them in the, where the ideas came from and how I sort of refine them as a 9-year-old.
I'm the sort of person who'll go and buy like an episode guidebook on, say, Mission Impossible, not that, having no interest in Mission Impossible previously, and then sort of ended up reading the episode guide, and then actually I'm going to buy some of these episodes.
But it's, yes, exactly. I mean, I'm hoping, you know, if there's any budding artists out there that, you know, reasonably priced, I'm looking for an artist. The lead character I always imagined to be Michael York in a hat and a raincoat. There's various descriptions of the other things in there, and a good space vista would be good. But yeah, I would love for anyone to throw their hat in the ring for that, and all offers can be considered. But that's my main thing at the moment. It's 17 years of my life, and I'd like to share it with people. The time has come to share it with people.
I don't know if we can try. I kind of like to do a bit of another writer's episode sometime, maybe around the time one of the books being available. Maybe if Joe would be up for being on the podcast, we could do some sort of writing chat with that as the centre. But then also just see what we all.
He would be a scream with the podcast.
So let's see where we go with it. Sort of.
Well, I think perhaps nearer the time.
Yeah.
An episode where we're actually, I mean, we could actually do a crossover thinking about it, because literally I write the story and we have a hell of a laugh because we, you know, there's spelling mistakes, there's obviously we're tidying up as we go, we're tidying up the grammar, and also when you look at some things you think, I tarted up a bit, you know, that doesn't work. And some of the ideas, I mean Orko, it's very, I mean, the thing is, I thought this is a very big journey, and the only way to do it properly is to tell a whole lot. Just empty my brain, empty everything I've got into this book, and everything is, well, there are two books, and everything's surviving, even memory. I mean, there's things like...
your stories are like, are they like two-parters, three-parters?
Yes, that's right, yes.
So do you actually know how many episodes in total?
No, well, I think I can't even remember how many we did well over 200 of Magnus Editors, because we got to
the 200 stories.
Sorry, 200 stories. Well, I don't think we ever enumerated the amount of episodes, but it's exciting, it's very amusing. I just hope people are going to enjoy it. But it's a snapshot, it's memoirs, it's confession, it's an episode guide, and it's a journey, an adolescent journey about, you know, growing up writing, growing up watching telly and being influenced by things. It starts as a kid's game. It ends with a 19-year-old and a 16-year-old knitting it all together and into one story. I did about four joint stories with Joe, totally joint, you know. Including a Halloween one where it was the first one we'd done joint, and we sort of got together, recorded it like we're recording now, and he'd do a scene, I'd do a scene, and we knew basically what the story was, and it was incredibly stimulating and much more successful than we'd imagined, because again, like yourself, we have different styles and we're working, so does Joe. It's work, and Joe's one of these people that has never really done anything out there with his writing, never evangelized his writing, and it's an awful shame, and it's been nice to see.
It's nice to have a book that sort of marks these things. I mean, I even want to, I'd like to do a book, just an episode guide of the podcast when I get to a certain amount of episodes, but luckily I've got all of, every episode that goes out has a little synopsis, so I have something to base it on, and I have a lot of notes and things.
My philosophy is, I mean, I don't know if there's the slightest interest to anybody, but it's out there, and it's a snapshot of the time, and also the influences, so that there's something going on outside of the series itself, so you've got something to reflect on, and how I'd do it differently now, or sort of looking as an adult at what I did as a child and the obvious kind of mistakes I made. But I'm hoping they'll get a lot out of it. But if nothing else, it's a completely recorded sort of history, really, of that particular series. And I've done a lot of retro things with my old projects, but it's very much an upgrade, and I'm certainly still up for new stuff.
It's sort of in the same way as we're in a different way, but in the same way as we're preserving episodes of Sutton Park. If you don't put all those plot lines and synopsis into a book, then something could happen to the bits of paper that they're on.
Absolutely. There's the old scraps of typed paper that the old synopsis of the magnet editor were on. Some of them were where the typewriter was, the rhythm was going on. And of course, we are in the electronic age, and I'm actually embraced that probably more than I did when I was younger, because you can store it and you can transfer it, you can send it all over the place. I really like that. I'm more forward to it. And it gets same with Sutton Park and all the films and all the home videos. It's magic to be able to take it to the next level. And very important that the next generation, if they
deem us worthy to be preserved, as it were.
It's all about stories.
It's all about stories. I'm looking forward to that coming out. But yes, I would thoroughly recommend Joe as a podcast.
Yeah, we'd try and get him, because I've got various things. I won't talk about them too much now because it sounds like we're going to have another writery episode coming up. But I've got the second series of both Hot Stuff and Kensington Gore, which are spin-offs of The Beast of Friends. But I have talked slightly about Yet You Don't Fall Backwards, which is a lost Beast of Friends story set in Venice, a sort of giallo Italian thriller type spoof. Although a lot of the characters from Beast of Friends have gone into sort of split in different directions and gone in either into Hot Stuff or Kensington Gore, I wasn't quite ready to totally never go back to the little team that were in Beast of Friends. Although I have kind of slightly engineered, got rid of two of the characters, just thinking about the four characters I like best. But just a couple of weeks ago, I decided I think the Lost Adventure thing worked quite well. I'd quite like to just write another season. I planned another whole Lost season with the Beast of Friends team sort of set between
it's interesting.
Season one or two.
Going back to the reoccurring characters thing, of course, I was a lot more into that when I was younger, and I think one of the things I'm finding when I'm going back to some of the stories is somebody obscure from something else from a previous story would pop up, and you would think, in both Joe and my one, you think, what are they doing there? What are they doing? Just hanging around. They're just holding the story up. And there's a 1984 story called The Jewels of Combat, which is one of my favourites. And it's a good swashbuckling, sword fighting, intrigue, court intrigue type story. And it's completely let down by the fact that this is dandy space time traveller that pops up from time to time, called Dementra. And he was in various previous stories, and the series had quite obviously outgrown him, and he didn't really have anything more to contribute, and he pops up again and photo bombs the cliffhanger. he's suddenly in danger, and sort of after all the hard work all the others had done, he just kind of pitches up in the story just for a cliffhanger, and you think, sod off. Well, you're ruining a really good story. You get away. And this is why I've never... With the films, I suppose, the only... There's two... Well, one instance of a returned character, which is Carol, but then she was played by someone completely different, and B, we've moved her story on 17 years. And I very nearly brought back your character, Pete, from Evil Trophy. I did consider putting him into Tide of Freedom and sort of... he's hanging out on the beach now he's been evicted from his home. But I'd sort of changed my mind. Of course, you were cast as Taffin anyway. So I suppose looking back, I think they recurring character. Well, yeah, I mean, obviously this is a recurring villain. Yeah, it's a bit like Batman, you know. Mm. Sort of the, that's fair enough. But there was, we brought back too many old things. Mm. The thing is, when Joe did brought back some of my stuff, I'm pretty easy to flatter. Mm. So I was always although there was one character called Twiddler, which was the first baddie canon.
He appeared in some
quite big hulking. Android based on Richard Kiel, who just appeared in Jaws as Jaws in The Spy Who Loved Me when Magneto first started, and it was revealed he was that android in one story, and that was the end of him. He felt, you know, sort of in bits. Joe brought him back in a story called Revenge of the Geminami, which was basically retread the steps of the first story, and said that he'd been put back together by an evil genius and blah de blah de blah, and fair enough, yeah, and he landed on a spike at the end. Right, he's dead, good, right, move on. And then he pitches up again in a story called The Seventh Year.
Hello. Everyone pitches up. It's me again.
It's like a party where everybody keeps turning up and you can't get rid of them. We've much has been written about The Seventh Year, which it's kind of, it's a turkey, a prince amongst turkeys.
Mm-hmm.
And Twiddler was in that, and I thought,
he had a good agent, didn't he?
I mean, yeah, and he got some sort of rust infection thing, and fizzled and melted away at the end of it. And then, right. 2 years later, one thing I loved about Joe was his excuses, and he would be, if a story was a six-parter, and he told you the plot, and you think, it hasn't got legs, really, has it? And he would confidently say, yes, thought, oh, this is going to run. Yeah, that's fine. And you get to episode four, and you go, how many more episodes have we got? And he said, oh, I think this will be a five episode. And the baddies had been vanquished at episode four of this six-parter. And Twiddler at the end, and I said, this is ridiculous. He fizzled into a mug. You know, there was no way he could have got away. He died before your eyes. You know, there wasn't nothing left of him.
Hey guys, it's me, Twiddler. How you doing?
And he would always. He would always, you know, the way he built it up. I loved the way he used to do this, because he was. He was a bit like an auntie who knew you liked reading, but always bought you the same book token round each year, you know, and or a grandfather who would made you laugh when he took his false teeth out at the age of two, and he was still doing it if you're 20, you know, even that kind of wait for it, it's coming, and you kind of. Oh. It doesn't have the same effect, but I sort of we switched off the table. And said, look, he's an old dude that started the show, and you know, we've moved on. He was played by a teddy bear in the first episode, and you know, it's right, okay, you can have him, but for goodness sake, kill the fucker off. Finish him off.
Didn't Lee do a puppet version of Twiddler first?
I would love to see that. I've heard many and varied stories about the Twiddler episode, because it was like in 97 when we had the 20th anniversary. I've never seen it, and I would love to see it. And I think, and I understand Harry played Twiddler, and of course I knew Harry at the time, and I would love to have seen that, really would. And I'm hoping it's going to come up in the latest.
I used to get told off by Neff when I brought Charlie Gurr into the Mass Common Stories, that because the Charlie that he envisaged was lovely and sweet, but that doesn't make a story. Charlie has to be this egotistical sort of trouble, the sore on, you know, that gets in the way of, and Gladstone has to try and clear it up.
Yeah.
And I said, sorry, the fictional version of Charlie has to be. The trouble.
But there's some people you just couldn't get rid of. there was one sort of aristocratic baddie that got ripped up by a monster, and he still came back because his brain was still around.
Yeah.
I think the only reason Twiddler's not knocking around today is I just could have. I said no more, and I mean it. This time.
He might have got his own series.
Well, I think so. I mean, you know, it was just one of these. Crappy ideas that you do, you know, because of I think my tongue was extremely in my cheek when I did those opening episodes.
So I promise I won't bring him back in episode 7 of our joint story.
I would actually laugh if I, he's like a teddy bear that you just can't get rid of, you know, literally. But there were numerous and monsters that shouldn't have come back, but he was incredibly supportive. But ask him to do something specific, he wouldn't do it. When we went over to Life After, I tried to get rid of cliffhangers. Mm. I said, well, you know, people aren't tuning into the next one. Yeah. So why don't you just...
like Blake or Space 1999 or something. We should wrap this yeah. chat up, and we'll try and do some more chat about writing when we can get Joe. Well, so that perhaps for the 500th episode of the podcast.
500th episode. Well, no, I think we can probably
get him in for it. Just get that whiskey out.
what you might want to do is, maybe not the whole story, but if I'm reading out a story of his, to him is a bedtime story.
Yes.
and some of his comments, which I record anyway. I've got a whole complete set of the... record. I've kept the recordings, and I'm aiming to keep them for posterity.
Yeah.
But he's some of his comments are quite fun because he's either said, "Oh, that was quite surprising," and he's fine. I thought, "Oh God, that was crap."
We shall get it done. We'll do this. We'll get it done this year at some point this year.
But no, I think that's going to be. I envisage that being quite an entertaining episode.
So. Yeah. But, well, thank you for talking today, and we shall talk again about writing soon.
As Gareth Thomas once put it, I could waffle for wheels.
Hello. Ictia, are you there? Oh, dear, I've seemed to have missed you once again. But I wanted you to know, Ick, that I've talked to everyone here on the Smellcast, and I've tried my best to warn them about this Nathan evil alien thing. I've tried to tell them that this nasty evil Nathan thing is the same nasty evil alien thing that I called Ashley back in the day. But... Ick, it's just the way you and I said. No one believes a word that I say. Isn't that terrible, Ick? Oh, dear, I don't know what to do. Well, I just wanted you to know that I'm getting nowhere here. I'm not getting any support at all. I think that it's going to be all up to you and me. Well, actually, Ick, dear, mostly up to you because, well, you're there. Well, I'm here. Oh, dear, this is a terrible, terrible thing. All right. Well, do call me back at your earliest convenience. And, you know, Ick, dear, I've said some terrible, terrible things about Nathan Ashley and how terrible they are. But, well, I know you are an alien too, dear, but I think that you're a cute, lovable alien and that you're my friend, and I wouldn't want you to think that, that I wanted to build a wall around the U.S. of A. and keep you out, because I'd like nothing better than to have you here right now. And we could have a cup of tea together and commiserate about our dear friend Bettina Dupre. Oh, dear, I'm so worried. Do call me back, dear. Bye-bye. Oh, and should you ever want to visit, dear, I've got lots of little books for you to eat. Yes, I do. All right, bye-bye.
Hello. Hello. I was wondering, is this the Big Fatty Show? The Big Fatty Online? Hi. I got a message for Poodle McNoodle. I don't know if you're there, Poodle, but, hey, do you remember me? Hey, do you recognize my voice? Hey, you know who I am? Yeah, that's right. Oh, yeah, you and I were, you know, we were, weren't we? Oh, yeah, we were pretty close once upon a time. I'd even go so far as to say you and I were lovers, Poodle. Oh, yeah. Anyway, well, I'd love to catch up with you. Oh, yeah. So, this is me, Ernest. Ernest the Sheepdog. Yeah, so, hope to see you again, Poodle. It'll be great catching up. Oh, yeah.
Hello. I'm just calling for Poodle McNoodle. Hi, Poodle. Hi. Oh, I know you probably don't remember me, but I was a Pride 48 a few years ago, and, you know, we kind of, well, we hooked up together. Do you remember? Oh, that weekend in Las Vegas was, oh, it was just heaven. I shall never forget you, Poodle. I just hope you're well, and, well, I hope you're having a good life, and I just want you to be happy, you know. Those few days we had together, they were precious to me. They really were. Anyway, this is me, Debbie the Dash Hound. So I just want to say I love you and goodbye. Goodbye.
Going with the theme of this episode, I'm going to read a mixture of poems and stories, but I'm also going to try and make the poems more poems that perhaps have a story in them as well. So, and I'd like to choose poems and stories for my books that I haven't read particularly often. I know that you as the listeners have only really heard what I've read so far, but I'm aware that there are certain poems I have performed a lot or I put videos out of, and I am trying to sort of go back and pick ones that you won't necessarily find on any of my YouTube videos, or you won't necessarily have heard me read if you've seen me perform. So this first batch is from my book Go Forth and Divide, which I published in 2003. Anything for her art. She watches from the bridge. She paints, painting what she sees upon the tracks. The body sprawled awkwardly in death upon the railway line, where he fell from quite a height after she pushed him, arms windmilling as he dropped, unprepared, yet accepting the inevitability below. There's not much time left, the train is due. Must capture him before the scene is spoilt. She tried it before, tried to paint with the remains, but blood isn't flexible, it's quick to become sticky, tacky, clotting. It dries on the canvas too quickly, discoloured and darkening, from a bright, vibrant red to a potent dusk brown. She is always ready to try new approaches, anything for her art. This one's called Black and White Cows. Are black and white cows only black and white because they can't afford the license fee? Are they jealous of the coloured ones, mooing, why is it them and never me? Then again, the coloured ones just look silly. They're reddy brown or sepia toned. They're probably just the rejects which no one ever wanted cloned. Did you ever see a blue cow or one in maroon and polka dot? Most likely black and white just works the best, whilst vivid pink, well, just does not. Have you ever seen a black and white cow getting drunk and acting rude? Only coloured ones do things like that or talk like dear-hearted Ermentrude. Still, talking cows they can intimidate. Talking cows can seem perverse. Black and white cows simply stand and chew. Yes, I prefer they don't converse. Black and white looks best at parties. Black and white looks cool on farms. It's not dull like beige or cream is, or so loud it sets off car alarms. No, black and white cows are black and white, because they know it looks the best. They're the trendsetters of the bovine world, and the envy of all the rest. This is called Breakages Must Be Paid For. Breakages must be paid for. We are drafting out a list for those whose hearts are aching, for those no longer blissed. Breakages must be paid for, always, right across the line. For sending flirty letters, there's a small yet certain fine.
Making advances in the office is £1, or maybe two. The price will be a fiver for pinching ladies in the queue. Yes, a fumble by the copier is £10.60. Not keeping all your promises will be double, no defence. But it's worse that I am planning, it's a loss you cannot measure. Reparations for the damages of a life without love's pleasure. Breakages must be paid for the heart is not exempt. For those loves left so dishevelled, for those loves left quite unkempt. Breakages must be paid for, every love rack kept in hand. Dating folk whilst on the rebound will cost you more or less a grand. If you kiss your lover's sister, leave the poor lass in the lurch. Well, we'll make it quite illegal to leave girls stranded at the church. We'll have watchdogs out to monitor, and guards patrolling all the towns. So gents do not attempt to put their hands up ladies' gowns. But there is some hurt you can't make up for, some sorrows cannot be recouped. It's the pain of true love shattered, yes, the tears of sweethearts duped. Breakages must be paid for, hard cash is only just the start, for some need final retribution to repair their broken heart.
Hello, Paul, it's me, your Yeti Uncle John. Now, I want to tell a story. Yes, I want to tell a story. I know that's what this episode is all about. And, I have been known to tell the odd, porky pies. That's what they call them, porky pies, lies. I know we're not necessarily focusing on lies, because that's a negative thing. And we're starting to speaking about sort of, fabrications or white lies, perhaps. Let's not get into that. Let me just tell you a tall tale that I once told. Yes, I once tried to pass myself off as a cartoon dog called James. Yes, I rang into Big Fatty's show, and I did a little message. Well, I recorded it, to be honest. I sort of sent it in, I emailed it, but I changed the voice on it. I recorded it, I changed the sound or the pitch, and I sent it in. I don't know if you know, but there has been a bit of a thing going on Big Fatty Show. There's the whole thing about Poodle McNoodle. Is she a dog, is she a woman? And I noticed there were a few other calls that had come in, other dogs calling in and chatting to her, so I just thought, I'd be a bit of a mischief. So, do you want to hear the message? You might have heard it already. But I sent this message in, and,
Hey! Hey! How are you? Hi! I just wanted to call in. Now, I've got a bit of a story here. My name is James, and I just wanted to respond to all this stuff I'm hearing about Poodle McNoodle being, a dog. And now I want to explain, my name is James, and I am a dog. I am a dog. I'm a cartoon dog. I appear in a cartoon called James the Dog, and I just want to refute all this stuff I'm hearing about Poodle being a dog, because I don't think she is a dog. Now, I think she thinks she's a dog, but then sometimes doesn't like to talk about it. But, it's a complex thing. Now, I don't mean to speak behind your back, Poodle. In fact, I'm not. I'm speaking to your face. Well, via the audio, anyway. And I just want to say, Poodle, just be who you want to be. Don't feel you need to be a dog or a woman. Or you can be a dog woman. Or you can be a mixture. Or you can be a dog Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. And then a woman the rest of the week. And then next week, you can be a dog on Tuesday and Thursdays. It's up to you. Don't let them bully you into it, I find life as a cartoon dog can be quite hard, so, it's different. Sometimes my pixels get all mushed up and it's not good, and, I would say that you just go with what you want to go with, and don't let anyone sort of make you feel that you must be one or the other. I suppose one thing I would like to say, though, is if you're ever free for a date, just give me a call. Yeah. Okay, bye now. Hey, how are you? Hi, this is me, James, the cartoon dog. I'm just leaving a message for Poodle McNoodle. I hope you're there, Poodle. Hi, do you remember that I called you just the other week? You know, I feel really stupid, but, you know, Poodle, I've been thinking about you. I know it's silly, and I know I'm just me, James the cartoon dog, and, you know, why should you be interested in me? Hey, I just wondered if you'd go on a date with me. I have my own jet aircraft, so, you know, I could pick you up and we could fly to Paris for lunch, or Venice, or, you know, wherever you like, really, within reason. So, let me know. It would be really good. What do you think? I don't care whether you're a dog or whether you're a lady. I just think you're someone special. Oh, I just can't stop thinking about you, Poodle. Please say yes. Row? Row, 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 row. I look forward to hearing from you.
Oh, dear. I hope I don't cause too much trouble. So, anyway, that's probably an example of me telling stories, making stories, telling tales. She did actually call back. We did go for a date. She's very nice. I couldn't tell if she was a dog or a lady, though. She was wearing a very big coat and a hat. I just couldn't see her face. You know, so I don't know the answer to that question. Anyway, sorry.
Hello, it's me, Dammy's Twinklehorn. I'm just calling in with, well, I think, tell a story, basically, about tall tales that I have told. Well, you know, as you know, most of my acting involves me doing quite, well, what some people might call strange roles, strange parts, trees, coat racks, or back ends of donkeys. So the tallest tale I ever told was when, a while ago, I was a little bit short on money. I got in contact with this director, and he was doing a documentary about sort of typical British jobs, and he wanted to speak to a teacher, he wanted to speak to, like, somebody who worked in the city, a vicar, and I told him that I knew all of those people, and I proceeded to turn up dressed as all three of those. I even turned up as a librarian, a lovely librarian with her hair in a bob, and he didn't look twice. He interviewed me about 17 times that day in different parts, and he didn't realise it wasn't just the same person. I got a good paycheck, at least. So, yes, that's the nearest I've ever got to telling a tall tale. That was quite a whopper, eh? Anyway, that's about it for this time, I think. Oh, dear. Don't think too bad of me, will you?
Hello? That's me. It's Charlie. Yes, what is it? What? I don't understand. Right. The time I told the biggest tall tale was the day I told a man that I did not like pies. I pretended I did not like pies, but what I really liked was salad. Yes, I said I liked tomatoes.
I mean, I like tomatoes in pies, but no, but I pretended I know I just liked salad. I managed to convince him, but as soon as he got away, I ate 12 pies. Oh, still, oh, it felt like I'd let the pies down, like I had denied them. Yes, oh, those poor pies. At least they forgave me, yes, when they went down my stomach, yes. Oh, yes, they were very forgiving. Mm. Lovely pies, lovely pies.
Hello, darling, it's me, Bettina. What do you want this time? Stories about tall tales? Oh, well, you know, I've told a few tall tales along the way. You can't get through life without telling a few whoppers. I'm trying to think of any specific ones. there was a time when I was dating somebody, and a girlfriend of mine, she was after the same man, and I had to I invented a few untruths, and I made it, you know, I'm not at all proud of what I did, but I told her that he wasn't really into her, and I told him that she wasn't really into her. Is that right? I told her that he wasn't really into her, and then I went and told him that she wasn't really into him, and then I sort of stepped in. Yes. Anyway. I probably shouldn't talk about this anyway. That's all I can think of, darling, this time. There's so much else, but I'm a bit distracted. I probably shouldn't have told that story. Oh, dear. Me and my big mouth.
Well, there you go. Some stories there, oh dear. Yeti Uncle John, you leave me speechless. That was you. I didn't realise. I'm still a little bit suspicious about those other two calls. You sure that wasn't you as well? I don't know. We're never going to find the truth. Did you really go for dinner with Poodle Butt Noodle? Somebody might have been playing a joke on you. And Damius, that was actually, I kind of admire you for that, because you're known for your weird roles. So to be playing normal, everyday people and playing all of them and not have the director realise, well, you deserve every penny you earned. I'd love to see that documentary. Charlie, I feel for you. That must have been a very difficult thing to have to say, and I'm sure, as you say, the pies forgave you, and well, and Bettina, that's fascinating. Well, you know, I'm sure we've all, you know, been in that situation where we've got a rival, and so I hope that was okay to. I hope that was okay to use your story. I didn't hear back from you, so I presume it's all right. Anyway, right. Well, those were some tall tales from the regulars, and I think it's time probably to move on. This is called Daredevil. Daredevil, dare him anything, though nothing really hard. Swimming underwater, smeared from top to toe in lard. There's a list of things he'd never do. Daredevil, dare him not. Perhaps I should remind you, just in case you had forgot. He doesn't dare to fight a pigeon, in case it poops upon his head. And he dare not kill a spider, in case it comes back from the dead. He wouldn't dare to ride the dodgems, cause they spin around too quick. And they might upset his stomach, and then make him really sick. Dare not play cards with a tiger, cause such a creature does not know.
the rules of games like cribbage and just might cheat and take another go. He'd never dare to fry a kipper because the smell it quite offends, nor ever read a penny dreadful without first checking how it ends. Once a year he might decide to try out something extra brave, like taking luncheon with his mother when he blatantly didn't shave. I doubt he'll ever be a devil dare he cross the other side. Alas, a single clap of thunder would make the poor old blighter hide. Daredevil dare him anything, though nothing vaguely scary, like killing a mosquito which would make him rather wary. There are a lot of things he'd never do. Daredevil dare him not at all, if the Earth's attacked by aliens. At least you'll know whom not to call. Exit pursued by a Yeti. Exit pursued by a Yeti. Exit pursued by a bear, and not a pleasant one neither, but one with bad teeth and no hair. Exit pursued by a mongoose, or moody with mad staring eyes, one you'd not trust with your granny, one who tells huge whopping lies. Exit pursued by a kitten, soft and furry but sharp as cut glass, being chased by a three-legged camel who does tricks for the tourists who pass. Exit pursued by prized rhubarb in a coating of lightly fried cheese, pursued by a troll in an igloo who resides in my neighbour's deep freeze. Exit pursued by a wombat, but a small one that bats for both sides, nearly squashed by a chain-smoking cyclops and a knife-welding pack of girl guides. You're pursued, never-endingly hounded, by odd beasts who might eat you for lunch. It is nice to be loved so and wanted, but not when fame comes with a crunch. Exit pursued by a Yeti, exit pursued by a bear, exit pursued by a mongoose from its sinister underground lair. Exit pursued by a kitten, but one with no love for its mother. Lock them all in a cupboard together, and with luck they might kill one another. How long have you two been together? How long have you two been together? How long have you two been a pair? It's only pretend, I informed them, just a laugh as a ruse for a dare. I wouldn't be seen dead as his boyfriend. I wouldn't if you paid me in cash. The thought of romancing that hussy brings me out in a cold, sweaty rash. But you look oh so perfect together. We had hoped you'd be settling down. She is welcome to settle, I told them, but I'll move to a separate town. I'd not see him, she cried. Why, he's ugly. What do you think I am? Doolally gone mad? If you think I'd go dating with that tart, what poor taste you must think that I had. Well, you just seemed so close, so together. You just seemed such an obvious twin. He's a nightmare, unsightly of belly, and she is just stick insect thin. His manners are those of the gutter. Her friends are more duller than she. He's a womanizer, such a cliché. She's a woman whose bed's always free. How long have you two been at battle? How long have you hated her guts? I despised her from the very first meeting. Since forever he's driven me nuts. When it's her birthday, I forget it on purpose. Well, I deliberately misplace his name. I'll always try hard to outdo her. Me too, yes, I'll do just the same. We realise now you were never together. We realise that we made a mistake. He has all the charm of cold porridge. She has all the allure of a snake. He lies like it's gone out of fashion. She fibs just as natural as breathes. He always must have the last comment. She's less mature than a baby who teethes. See, I told you he must have the last word. I do not. You so do. Don't go on. Well, you do. You're no better. Oh, sorry. I've just noticed our audience is gone. Which is good. Let's make up. Get together. Keep us secret. It's so precious, this life. I adore you. Abhor you. It's the same thing. For true love, it can't last without strife. This is called killing time.
I'm killing time, I'm tracking it down. I've got the dogs on the hunt to pursue across town. I'm seeking revenge for injustices had, for it giving me wrinkles and for it making me mad. I'm getting my own back, dig the knife deep within, for time turning me dumpy when once I was thin.
There are no ties to bind me, disobeying all laws. Time waits for no man, no, it won't even pause. I've got time on my hit list, wanted dead, DOA. There is no getting round this, yes, time is going to pay. I'll not let it escape, I will not let time flee, for killing my loved ones before then turning on me. I'm killing time, I'm searching it out. I'm wringing its neck, whilst there is no one about. Oh, how I want compensation for my years all gone by. Yes, killing time with a smile to take an eye for an eye.
Well, that's about all we have time for now. So thank you for joining us for this episode about Tall Tales. I mean, if we can't discuss Tall Tales as part of the Shy Life podcast, then where can we discuss it? Because, to be honest, quite a lot of what you hear are tall tales, one way or another. From Toppy and my imaginary childhood to shitey scripts and daft stories and sketches that we present to you. Of course, it's all true. It's all true. Absolutely, of course. So, what next time? Well, I'm not sure what's coming up next. I won't even pretend I do. But there will be something. So, please join us. Please join us again. And we look forward to seeing you here very soon. So, take care. Bye for now.
Hello, Rick, dear. Are you there? Oh, dear, I know how you like to eat books, but if you're eating a book right now, I'd like you to stop and answer the phone. It's me, Tappy Danielle. Oh, it doesn't seem like you're there. But I'm awfully worried, Ick dear. I haven't heard from you, and I know you're on this very important mission to watch out for our dear friend, Bettina Dupre. I'm just worried that I haven't heard anything from you. Oh, dear, I hope everything's all right. I hope that nasty, evil, alien Nathan thing is not bothering you. Oh, dear, call me back. Ick, dear. All right. Bye-bye.
I gotta go now!
I don't care!
Bye!
I want to go with you!
Gotta go! Bye!
Goodbye!
It's quite long.
No. Hey! That's insulting.
Goodbye, 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 goodbye.
This show is part of the Pride 48 Network. Find more shows over at pride48.com.
Okay, bye.
Weird, super weird.
He's a nightmare.
He's not that shy.
104. I don't know if you noticed, listeners, but I was doing some research, and do you know how many fireflies it takes to put together an episode of the Shy Life podcast, as far as, you know, when I process it. Yeah, because, you know, when you process it, it goes away into the computer and you think, well, you know, it's just the computer doing it. Well, apparently, it's not the computer. It gets sent off to a load of fireflies. Yeah, and the fireflies mix it all around, turn it into one of them little MP3 files, and, you know, after a while, those fireflies, They get worn out. They get worn out. They get tired. They have to rest for fear of their flames going out. So apparently, for every episode of the Shy Life podcast that gets made, 25 fireflies are like sort of, they're not killed. Don't worry, they're not killed. But it sort of drains them. It drains them. Yeah.
Awful, isn't it? I had no idea. Still, never mind. At least it goes towards something that we all enjoy. I presume they're getting paid. I don't know, it sounds like a tall tale to me. It really does.
Oh, no, Paul. It's not the April Fool's episode.
That was just a tall tale. It's not true. There were no fireflies involved in the making of this episode.
Oh, no. It's not fireflies, is it? It's woodlice.
I don't think it's woodlice either.
Are you sure? Maybe it's fleas.
I don't think we want to associate the podcast with fleas, thank you very much, Yeti Uncle John.
Or maybe thunderbugs.
I don't think it's any of those things, John. Can we just fade down? This is the end of the episode.
It's the end. Oh, is it? Sorry. End of the episode. Oh, bye, listeners. Goodbye. 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 Goodbye.